a time, I suppose.
Welcome to Watchmen Minute, where we're discussing the 2009 Zack Snyder film Watchmen, 1 minute at a time. I'm Eric Nash.
My name is Travis Bowe from the Real Comic Heroes podcast.
And I'm Bob Kester from the Immunities podcast.
Hey, Bob. Great to have you back. One last time, I think, right?
Yeah, great to be here.
So this is minute 138, and it starts with Archie rising out of the water and ends with a large man changing his answer.
This first thing we see is Archie rising up from the water, and it's that trailer moment that was like, it was an oh shit moment for me when you watching that trailer so many years ago, and it's got the Smashing Pumpkins song, the end.
Right.
I think it's the end is the beginning is the end, or
versus the beginning is the end is the beginning.
I'm never sure which one's which, but it's like right as the ship breaks the surface, that's when the lyrics start in that trailer. Just a real, just gorgeous moment. I think that's kind of that comes right after you see Dr. Manhattan kind of, being blasted apart. So it's, I think those two moments, you see Dr. Manhattan and then you see this owl ship come out of the water, and it's like, oh my God, they're doing something faithful to the,
Yeah, they're really doing it.
Yeah, yeah. I actually just rewatched the trailer a little bit before we started recording. Just because of, seeing the ship here in this minute just reminds me of how excellent that trailer was.
Yeah, I love this shot. Yeah. This is, unlike Crystal Beth, I'm willing to take a few moments to to just take in the greatness of what's going on.
Right.
At least in a director's cut, maybe not when you're sitting in the theater.
But. Yeah. See a little bit of New York skyline here in the evening. You've got the Twin Towers, which are just off center, kind of in the center of the shot. Once the, the owl ship kind of gets up and then out of the, out of the middle of the frame and starts to fly off, you see the two towers, the Twin Towers there. I believe it puts us in the East River, based on where the World Trade Center there is positioned. And you can kind of just barely make out the top of one of the towers, which the North Tower is the one that had the big radio antenna. So you can kind of see that here. It's lit up, so you can, based on which one of those is on the right-hand side of the screen, that puts that as being the north side. So that would put us in the East River. At first, I thought we were on the opposite side of Manhattan in the Hudson, but I finally worked out where we would be. So the Brooklyn Bridge would be just to the right off screen. So it's just barely being cut off from the right edge of the frame there. There's a building kind of to the right. I'm sorry, to the left of the towers there. You kind of see the top of the buildings all lit up real bright. That is 40 Wall Street. The building was originally known as the Bank of Manhattan Trust Building, which was built in 1929. It was the tallest building in the world for a short while until the Chrysler Building's steel spire was constructed. And then in December of 1995, it was renamed the Trump Building. So, not Trump Tower, but the Trump Building. Right. That's a different building, but.
Yeah, I do love how New York this movie is.
Yeah.
We've seen at various points and things like that, which is great, particularly since, usually Marvel has a kind of monopoly on that as far as a city for superheroes to be in.
Sure.
Well, and way over on the left, that's a dirigible, right? That's being lit up.
I think so,
from a building below it.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
But, Yeah.
At nighttime, put some spotlights on one of your dirigibles that's floating over your building.
Yeah.
And actually, before we get zoomed out to this, or you know, shown the whole skyline, it's the sound that you hear at first is one of the buoy bells.
Oh yeah, yeah.
And I even I quickly just because I want to spell it correctly in my notes that too. And it's going back to the infamous last big sex scene. And what you talked about on the Nightwing's costume, the grommets.
Oh, sure.
There's a thegrommet.com some kind of supply seller of buoys of not these big ones, but more like decorative ones for your house, like to hang on that beach people, I guess, would probably put on their porches.
Okay, that's funny. We transition to this bar, and we start to hear Waylon Jennings' version of Clyde playing over the speakers in the bar. And I know nothing about this song.
Yeah, me neither.
It's what it really gets me in the mood for is like BJ and the Bear. I don't know if you know. I'm definitely a little bit older than Travis. I'm not sure about your age.
Well, it's funny because I was about to say that my only connection to Waylon is as the narrator of Dukes of Hazzard.
Yeah.
But...
yeah, and that actually was the more popular for me too. That's for sure. Dukes of Hazzard. But BJ and the Bear was on in the afternoon sometime, and I just kind of remember. I mostly just remember theme songs of shows back then, because I think I changed the channel pretty quick as soon as I realized this isn't really a show for me at 5 years old. Even though that probably was their target audience, just for me it just doesn't seem to work. But even though it had a monkey in it,
yeah,
or a chimp actually, it's that whole chimp craze with Clint Eastwood and
yeah, the 70s where's a. After the it was sort of the dying down of the gorilla craze from the 60s, yeah. Then it became the chimp craze. rewatching this the first time, it took me a second. I was thinking, it's like, who is ordering like a whole tray of shots? Are there like some bachelorettes in the corner or something like that? And then of course I was thinking, wait, this is the round that the guy bought everybody.
Yeah,
that did not buy their silence.
We get to meet two new characters in this minute. The bartender counts because he says two words and therefore gets credited. So he's the Happy Harry's bartender and is played by John Destry. And then our other character in this minute is the large man, played by Mark Atchison.
The bartender definitely does a good job with his one line.
Yeah.
He definitely sells it.
Yeah.
Well, it took me a few watches to kind of make sure. It's his lips that are moving there. He's the one that's seeing them, and he's saying it. But then when I did look him up, he seems to be a bit of an older Canadian regular, semi-Canadian regular, you know, some X-Files and not quite the more recent Supernatural stuff. He hasn't done.
Yeah,
that older.
He was the Zamboni driver in Happy Gilmore. I was happy to see that. I looked at his IMDb, of course, and like you said, some of the older Canadian stuff. I was happy to see he was in an episode of Highlander, which I love that show. And then I was surprised to see that if you go to the episode of Highlander that he was in, Run for Your Life from 1993, I looked in the cast list for that episode and Mark Atchison's name was there as well. I kind of did a scanning through both of their lists and everything and found out that, they were in... they both appear in Watchmen, Hot Rod, the Andy Samberg movie, as well as 3,000 Miles to Graceland, and then Reindeer Games, and then that Highlander episode. So there's a little part of me that's like, I just want to find out that these guys are friends, you know, and that they just like working together.
One of them was hired first for one of the more likely Mark Atchison, I would
think. I think so, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mark's IMDb list is a lot longer than John's. I think Mark is one of those guys that he just seems so much more recognizable. Like, he seems like the go-to, you know, TV bouncer, ex-prison guy, biker, generic tough guy, that sort of thing. Like, you know, I think he's perfect here just as this large man. But yeah, I think I probably have seen him a lot more in TV, although, you know, some of those were obviously movies that we listed. And he was the mailroom employee that befriends Buddy the Elf in Elf. So that's probably one of his more recognizable, I guess, roles. But
one of the biggest thing for me that stood out was his role in Fargo. Now, I certainly didn't recognize him from that. I never connected it over the years when I saw him there and think, oh, this character or that. Yeah. But he was in a couple episodes from the first season. And interestingly, because the second season goes back in time, there's someone else, I'm pretty sure. It doesn't list him as being in the second season. So, but his character apparently appears, has a little bit of a smaller role, just in one episode. But you see his kind of more of that character's start. Moses Tripoli.
That's a great name.
Yeah.
And he definitely is a Canadian regular because he was in all three of the longest running shows. If I remember right, X-Files is one, but then the other two are the more recent. Stargate. And maybe Smallville?
I thought it was
Supernatural.
Supernatural, Smallville, and X-Files. Or maybe it was Stargate. Yeah. Maybe X-Files wasn't one of them. I don't know.
Well, one of those
three. Either way,
four. It's definitely.
Yeah.
Definitely has a definite qualifier.
Book.
Yeah, it seems like any show that's going to have scenes in a bar could definitely use that guy.
Yeah.
I wouldn't be surprised if he did some Forever Night or.
So it feels like the beginning of a joke. Two superheroes walk into a bar. I like that for just a quick beat, it's kind of an odd sight to the people in this bar. Like they turn to look at him and everything, but you know, maybe because of the way Rorschach is still operating, maybe this isn't that uncommon. So, you know, we saw earlier in the movie him just strolling down an occupied sidewalk with no real concern of who is seeing him. So he's not, you know, he doesn't hide from people. So maybe this isn't too.
Although I think I mentioned in the society at the the Facebook group at the time that I have a theory that he's not really walking around in his mask at that point. That, you know, he's like, you know, walking with his end of the world is nigh board or something like that. And he's just thinking of himself as being Rorschach.
Adds a little more anonymity and as a disguise. I vaguely remember. Because
in the comic, I think it's all just completely first person, so you have no idea one way or another. But
Well, and the other thing that kind of helps, I think, back that up would be that, you know, we have the scene earlier on the TV, they're showing footage of Rorschach walking around a little bit, like on the street.
Oh, really?
You know, some fairly blurry footage.
Yeah, it was
almost like he's Bigfoot.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, that's great.
It's like file footage or something they listed it as.
But it's certainly not like today where everyone has a video camera in their pocket.
Right, right. But yeah, Dan at least definitely looks a little silly when he first walks in.
Yeah. Of the two.
Yeah. Such a great moment when Rorschach calls out the pyramid name, and then just slowly everyone backs away from this guy. Right. And I love the visual joke, and then him following it up with the, you know, you bastards.
Yeah, it's just perfect.
Yeah, yeah.
So that, and he says that he bought everyone around. Right, so right. Does he do that every night when he goes out to the bar, or did he just have a feeling this night that he was?
Someone I think might he just came in? Into some money.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. That's right. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, he's got his, you know, whatever he got paid to hire Roy Chess, probably. In the book, it seems more like he thinks he's going to die. Sort of like he had, like, that, you know, one way or another, something's going to go terribly wrong. And so he's just sort of living it up. But yeah, here he more seems just like he's flush and wants to spread the wealth.
Yeah, that's how I've always taken this scene. Although he kind of sits there, it seems like he's there by himself, and he looks kind of lonely almost before people start backing away from him. It's mm-hmm. It doesn't look like he's the guy that said, you know, around for everybody, and then is now suddenly the you know, everyone's favorite person. You know, it doesn't it doesn't even feel like it's that vibe in the place, but. Mm-hmm. But maybe it's just not that kind of place, you know. Even if you do buy everyone around, they're still not going to be your friend.
It's kind of sad.
Yeah. Yeah.
I feel like they should sell his bigness a little bit more compared to Rorschach.
Oh, yeah.
Just to just so that you have some sense of, like, why he's going to, like, you know, even try to fight him. Because, I mean, he is still bigger, but, like, you know. Rorschach just took it out, you know, took out a whole prison full of people.
Right.
So should they have done the Marty McFly Biff Tannen over the over the shoulder shot then?
Yeah, that's exactly what I was thinking of. Sort of like an upward shot, you know. It's like, you know, it's like,
we can't.
Are
see...
you saying something, Pipsqueak? Yeah, exactly.
But we can't see Rorschach's eyes.
Right, right.
Like Dan kind of still trying to just keep the peace and pretend that everything is fine.
Yeah, I would call that the second least convincing, like, attempt to, like, you know, calm a crowd after what is it in Anakin Skywalker in Attack of the Clones, where he's like, Jedi business, go back to your drinks.
You buy some death sticks.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Although it is nice that he says, we'll try to keep this brief. So it's not that he's denying that, you know, he's not saying everything's fine. You know, he's just saying this unpleasantness will be over as soon as possible.
Yeah, exactly. There's a certain amount of unpleasantness per second that's going to go on, but hopefully there will not be too many seconds. For it to...
It's weird the way Rorschach says, you know, tried to kill Adrian Veidt, dead now. Like, wait, Adrian's dead now?
Rorschach leaves some, like, you know, so some work for the student, you know, for the listener to put together things together for himself.
Me speak less, save time.
Yeah. Kevin. The next thing he says is, you know, did you know him? And he has a very unique, like, timbre to his voice that I've never heard Rorschach use any other time in the movie. Cause he says, like, did you know him? It doesn't sound like Rorschach, you know, it sounds like he's getting personal with the guy, or it's just different. I don't know what it is.
Did you know him carnally?
Maybe he's almost hoping that the guy's going to try to weasel out of it if he doesn't come on too strong so that he can then, like, get rough with him. I don't know.
I do want to go back to the one thing that our large man says, Mark Atchison. Squidgy. I'm
going to stick squidgy, this in here. Yeah.
So I had to Google that real quick. And soft and wet and changing shape easily when pressed. So eyes are pretty much usually squidgy, I would say. Most people's eyes.
That's true.
Yeah, that's pretty perfect. You'd
have
to
have some kind of problem if you're... Have to have a glass eye.
That guy's been doing the expand your vocabulary test or something. So he's got
almost exactly seems like something right like a pirate would say, like Popeye or some pirate.
Squidgy.
Or Quint.
Yeah.
Quint would say squidgy.
And we get the grabbing of his hand and crushing the glass in it. It's so rough, especially because, you know, with the extra squeezes that he adds throughout this interrogation. Mm-hmm. It'll continue into tomorrow's minute, but it's made even better, I think, by the reaction shot from Night Owl, because you can tell he's not fully prepared for their old ways of squeezing people. So it's like he's still willing to go along with Rorschach's methods and everything, but he doesn't, you know, he's not happy about it.
Right. So. Which will change pretty quickly in a couple minutes from now, in the director's cut anyway.
Yeah.
And there was that shot over to the Knot Top sitting there. Right.
Yeah.
Watching this all go down, drinking his beer or whatever.
I feel like the theatrical version, it starts to pan away before he, like, because it's almost the Knot Top's point of view, seeing Dan or seeing Night Owl kind of do a half turn towards him. And then the shot of him actually of the Knot Top, you know, drinking his beer, and I think that is quickly added for the director's cut here, and then obviously that'll pay off. But you know, in theatrical we had no Hollis death scene, and so there was no reason to add the following scene, and that's where that quick little beat was cut out. Any other thoughts on Rorschach's interrogation?
I'll just say, I mean, sort of as a capper on the stuff that I've said the last couple of days, is that this really shouldn't have worked in terms of, like, you know, breaking this case. And that, I mean, it's fun in a way, but it also, you know, if the idea of the story isn't for Rorschach to be, like, the hero, you know, it's not, you know, this does kind of make him the hero, like, within this world, you know, that he always seems to know the right, you know, technique to get to the next step. And, you know, if I was going to take this film too seriously, you know, it would be that, you know, this kind of feeds the idea that, you know, the police could get rid of all crime if they would just, like, you know, didn't have all these liberal rules on them and stuff. Whereas, you know, you think of, like, the countries the worst mafias come from tend to be ones where, you know, the police, you know, actually are kind of, you know, don't have a lot of rules on them, you know, like the Russian mafia and stuff, you know, so.
The Russian what?
Yeah, exactly. But you know, there's just this thing in, like, crime films in general, but it's just, you know, the sort of the nature of the beast is that, you know, your heroes are going to be, you know, you want to create, like, you know, dichotomies and choices, you know, and it's like, you know, it's like the choice between, you know, liberties and effectiveness or something like that, you know, and it's no fun if, like, you know, this wouldn't really work.
Well, and this is a lead that they were following for Happy Harry's, right? That from, like, a matchbook. Did we say that?
Oh, we didn't talk about that.
Oh, no, we didn't. Yeah.
Because I think that's right. I think it was it on a matchbook?
It was, and yeah.
And I don't know if we said it the first time when we saw that, but I'm pretty sure that was, we probably have it in my notes somewhere, maybe, or emails even, but that could have been the other name for our listeners group.
Oh, yeah. Oh, there you go. Yeah,
I think that was an option.
That's an excellent point, actually. And in the book, you know, he I think, you know, he says that he's just been to four other places.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And this was just so kind that would of be
a movie, more
list.
Of a movie thing.
Yeah,
well, that's a good idea.
Well, first I went to Happy Larry's, and then Happy Gary's,
and then to Lappy Harry's.
different place completely.
Yeah, exactly. Owned by the same guy, though.
Well, Bob, can you tell us a little bit about your history with Watchmen?
Sure. Yeah, I read it in college, as you know, it's one of those things college is for, apparently. which was in, like, the very early 90s. So, you know, I was reading that in Dark Knight and Elektra Assassin, which is actually my favorite comic book to this day. you know, all about that same time, you know, and was like, wow, comic books are really getting getting pretty cool. But it wasn't my favorite, like, out of that whole group.
Yeah.
After a while, I think that's what it's a comic book. It's taken me a lot longer to come to appreciate all of its. I mean, part of it, I think, is it requires like a sort of knowledge of comic books and how they work in order to fully appreciate it that I didn't really have at the time. Mm-hmm. And, so as a result, I think it made me, cause yeah, it's funny. You were talking about the preview. I can't remember if it was today or yesterday. But it seems like some of my friends who were like most gaga about the preview were the people who then kind of turned against the movie when it came out. Whereas I think having like a more measured appreciation for the comic book in the first place, I ended up liking the movie more than a lot of them did. Okay. But, so yeah, I was pretty much on the movie side from the beginning and, just more so every time I watch it. The, I still haven't brought myself to watch the Ultimate Cut, though. I don't know why, but it just seems like such a mountain.
Yeah. I mean, if you got to be prepared to sit there for 3.5 hours, you know.
Exactly. And as I say, I've watched Under the Hood and the Black Freighter a bunch of times already. Yeah. So I actually sort of like before that came out, I actually had people over because my idea was that maybe like even this Watchmen might have done better as like a mini series or something like that. And so I figured out we'd watch like about 50 minutes and then watch Under the Hood and then watch, you know, take a break, watch another 50 minutes, watch Black Freighter, take a break, then watch the last 50 minutes. Yeah, you know? Okay. And it breaks pretty easily. You know, you can like basically watch up until all the funeral stuff is over and then watch up until Rorschach gets arrested and then watch the rest.
Okay. Huh.
So perhaps I feel like I've had my ultimate version
right,
already.
Right, right. I kind of like that, yeah.
But yeah, I've mostly liked. Yeah, I mean, I liked it. I like Zack Snyder when he's not. Except, I feel like DC is not the place where he belongs. Like doing the, like I like some of the stuff he's done with like Batman and Superman and stuff like that. But I really don't think that he. It almost feels like he's just making Watchmen over and over.
Okay.
Which I think leads to a lot of interesting choices, but I don't think that's how you build a cinematic universe, with something like that. At some point I was talking to somebody and I was like saying, you know, it's like, well, you know, the MCU made people very DC very desperate. So they turned to a man they did not understand.
The size of a tangerine.
You know, and they could just see him coming in. It's like, do I look like I have a plan?
Yeah. That's funny.
But, you know, but Watchmen itself, I like a lot, you know, even that, you know, there's little things here and there that, you know, you have to quit, you know, you can question why everybody's got sort of Bond villain level strength and mm-hmm. stuff like that. But, but you know, if within the world of like, super, you know, action movies, I think it's like a slightly different set of rules. And so I think it sort of works on that level.
Yeah.
That's it.
Right on. Very cool.
Bob, is there you want to tell the listeners one last time about what you do and how to find you?
My podcast Immunities is on the Dueling Genre Network. You can get it at duelinggenre.com. There's also links for a bunch of ways to get it at immunitiesdrama.com, plus other information. We're Immunities Drama on Twitter, Immunities on Facebook. And then my science fiction novel, Insistent Oracles, that I mentioned earlier, is available on Kindle or on paperback from Amazon or audiobook from Audible. Almost said Audacity.
Very cool.
Awesome. Well, we definitely appreciate you joining us this first part of the week.
Oh, yeah. It's been a great time.
Some great insight there, Bob.
Yeah. I'm glad you got to be here for your favorite minute. Yeah. Of the movie.
Yeah, that worked out really well.
Yesterday, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, if that's not my favorite minute, it's close to the top, that's for sure.
Yeah, I guess I should say my favorite minute after the credits.
Ah.
No, yeah.
Sure.
The credits are hard to beat.
Yeah, yeah.
Of the body of the movie, that's my favorite credit. My favorite minute.
Okay, well, thanks so much again, Bob, for joining us.
Thanks for inviting me.
This was Minute 138. We'll be back tomorrow, Thursday, for 139 with another guest. Until then, who watches The Watchmen? We do.
We do.
Watchmen are over.